As mentioned, we are joined right now by somebody who covers college football and, in fact, all barbecue-related issues for The Athletic. Host of The Andy Staples Show, co-author of Getting to Neutral, How to Conquer Negativity and Thrive in a Chaotic World, which is a great book. Andy Staples is my guest. Andy, what's going on? How are you?
I'm doing great, Jim. How are you doing?
Good, dude. Good. Great to have you back. Let me start right here. It's Ohio State Michigan week, and you wrote a great piece for The Athletic yesterday saying that every team in the Big Ten, Andy, should be rooting for Michigan in the game. Why is that?
I think people took that the wrong way, that they thought I was saying that they should like Michigan or something. What they should be rooting for Michigan, the reason they should be, is because if Michigan can beat Ohio State, or even if this game is very competitive and Ohio State wins, then it's a signal to everybody else that possibly Ohio State completely dominating the Big Ten is over. That Michigan figured out a way to close that talent gap, which was pretty huge. And maybe there's a model that can be followed. And maybe the Penn States of the world and the Wisconsins of the world and the USCs of the world who are about to come into the league, maybe they can also build a team that can take down the Buckeyes or at least compete with the Buckeyes. Because, you know, that's the problem is from about 2017 to 2020, there just wasn't anybody really to compete with them. They would lose the occasional game if they lost focus, but they were two touchdowns better than everybody in the league. That game against Michigan last year showed they don't have to be. And this year, Ohio State can either bring it back to the status quo or Michigan can say, hey, guess what? We're going to be here.
I get it. I know exactly what you're saying. Now, Andy Staples joining us. Let me ask you this. It's not that Ryan Day needs this game, far from it, but how big is this game for Ryan Day?
It is big, and it's interesting because those of us on the outside are looking at it and going, what's your problem? Ryan Day has lost one regular season Big Ten game. That was the Michigan game last year. Like, there's nothing going on wrong. Everything's fine. But Ohio State fans who are used to a certain level of dominance are going to freak out if they lose this game because you're not allowed to beat everybody else and lose to Michigan. Just ask John Cooper. It doesn't work that way for Ohio State fans. They're much more like an SEC fan base, like an Alabama or LSU or Georgia fan base, where they're like, no, no, no. You compete for national titles or else. And so they will be the ones all over Ryan Day if Michigan winds up winning this game.
All right, so what about the matchup itself, Andy? Biggest game of the year in the Big Ten. Both are a bit banged up right now. Who do you like coming in?
So I have no idea who's going to win this game, Jim. And it's interesting because we were talking about this on my podcast, and one of my co-hosts asked me, if Michigan hadn't won the game the way they did last year, what would your assumption be? And I'm like, oh, probably Ohio State and probably by more than a touchdown. But because Michigan won the game the way they did, and it feels like when Jim Harbaugh retooled his staff after that horrible 2020 season, it feels like he retooled the program to compete with Ohio State, to beat Ohio State on this day. And they are tougher up front. And really, I do think Michigan's offensive line should be pretty good. They should be able to run the ball. Hopefully Blake Corum can play. You know, we saw him get hurt against Illinois. He only came back and carried one time. But Ohio State's best running backs also hurt. Mayan Williams may be coming back. And then Travion Henderson ended the Maryland game in a boot. So we don't know for either team what the run game is going to look like. I am very curious how much pressure Michigan can get on C.J. Stroud, because that was the big deal last year, is Aiden Hutchinson and David Ojabo were just battering C.J. Stroud play after play after play. And if you can do that and get him off schedule, then it does take away some of that advantage of having, like, Marvin Harrison Jr., the best receiver in the country, on your team. So how much can Michigan's defensive line get after C.J. Stroud? I think that may be the thing that decides the game.
Talking to Andy Staples, big, big matchup. It always is involving these two teams, but never more so than right now. So bouncing around a little bit, Andy, when you look, for instance, at Georgia, when you see Georgia this year, do you see a dominant team? For instance, do you feel like it's Georgia and everybody else, or do you think maybe the SEC is not quite what it used to be and that Georgia, in fact, is beatable, imminently beatable?
I don't know if they're imminently beatable. I think you have to have a pretty special combination of talent to beat them, and I'm not sure of the teams that are left, there's anybody outside Ohio State that has that level of talent. But I don't know that Georgia's as dominant as they were last year defensively, because it's hard to be. think about all the guys they had that were drafted off that team. You know, two first-round defensive linemen, including – I'm sorry, three first-round defensive linemen, including the number one overall pick, And oh, by the way, the guy who actually may have been the best of those guys, still there, is Jalen Carter. So I'm not that worried about Georgia. I think if Georgia plays the way it should win the national championship, because it's, you know, you look at all these different teams, and like Ohio State, when they've needed to run the ball, actually haven't really been able to do that. Georgia, they can beat you any way they want. The only team that has beaten teams in different ways like that is TCU. Like, TCU has found a bunch of ways to win games. But if you just stack up these rosters player for player, you're going to pick Georgia in that game every time, probably by 2 touchdowns.
All right, so if that's the fact, like, if Ohio State is the only other team that's got the kind of firepower or star value or talent to hang with Georgia, can you make an argument for anybody other than either of those two teams to win it all?
I really can't. It's very hard. I mean, if somebody had a great game against Georgia, now, like, let's say Ohio State snuck in there at number 4, which the only way that works is if Michigan beats Ohio State and then some stuff happens, and Ohio State winds up probably compared to like a 12-1 Clemson and winds up getting in, which would mean that USC's lost, TCU's probably lost. But that's about the only way I can see where they would match up and Ohio State could beat them, but then somebody could beat Ohio State, because Ohio State has flaws that can be exploited, and in a championship game, one game situation, not a series, you got a chance. But if Ohio State wins this game, they're going to go in as the number 2 seed, provided Georgia wins the SEC and they're number 1. They wouldn't see each other till a championship game. So it's probably going to be one of those two.
Andy Staples covering a lot of ground as always. So, Andy, what about the Pac-12? USC had that thrilling win over UCLA that moves the Trojans to number 5 in the latest AP poll. This week, you've got Lincoln Riley's team hosting Notre Dame, and then likely will face Oregon in the Pac-12 title game, giving them a chance to beat 2 more ranked teams. If USC can run the table, do you see them making the playoff?
I do. I think they're in at 12-1. I also think if they go 12-1, which is not an easy feat given the state of their defense, that Caleb Williams will win the Heisman Trophy. And you saw how awesome Caleb Williams had to be for them to win that UCLA game. He will have to be equally awesome against Notre Dame and against, we're assuming Oregon, as long as they beat Oregon State, could be Utah, but we're assuming he'll be awesome again, and he would have to be, because their defense is not very good, and it is going to require Caleb Williams to be Superman every single time. And so far, he's been pretty much up to the challenge. So if he can pull that off, I would expect him to be raising the trophy in New York.
I agree with you. Andy Staples joining us for a few more moments. You know, Andy, we could talk in a minute, maybe, if we have time, about Lane Kiffin and Auburn and the like. You know what I'm really curious about, though? I'm curious about where you think Deion Sanders is going to end up. And is there anything at all to rumors about him maybe being in Colorado?
I think it'd be interesting. I think Deion would be great as a Power 5 head coach, because he's going to recruit a great roster. I think he's shown you at Jackson State, he understands how to staff a program. You know, they do have a talent advantage where they are, but he's also done a good job of picking assistant coaches who know what they're doing. And in a lot of cases, assistant coaches who were very good players who maybe had not been through the usual kind of grind of going through a graduate assistant, all that. And it makes sense, because, you know, Deion's thing is, in the time I would have been doing all that stuff, I was busy being the best cornerback in the world. And there's value in what those people bring too. In fact, maybe more value in what those people bring. So I can't wait. I hope that he winds up at a Power 5 program. Colorado would be probably the toughest of the ones that's open right now. Like, I don't understand why Arizona State isn't crawling over broken glass to try to get to him. Like, that doesn't make
sense.
Seriously,
why do you think that is? I agree with you. Why do you think that is?
I don't know. They've kept the same AD who hired Herm Edwards, but they've brought in a special assistant to the president who was the president of Robert Morris University. Seems like he's going to be the heir apparent to the president of Arizona State, who's a former college football player. He's the one making the hire. So they've been pretty tight-lipped about it. So I may be completely wrong. You know, maybe they're talking to him. Maybe they've already interviewed him. I don't know. But that's the one where I feel like you could get a roster there, because, one, there's always a bunch of great quarterbacks in the Phoenix area. You're a short drive from L.A. All you got to do is tell those linemen from the Midwest, hey, come on a visit in November, and you'll never want to leave. And all of a sudden, you've got a talented roster that in what the Pac-12 is going to be can be really good every single year. So, I mean, that would have been my first call if I had been them.
So Andy Staples joining us. Let me sidebar before I send you out. Andy, you You look great, dude. You sound great. How do you feel?
I feel amazing, Jim. I was doing pull-ups this morning. 2 years ago, I couldn't do a single pull-up. Like, it's awesome. So, just trying to eat less, work out more. And that's going to be my diet book. It's going to be called Eat Less, Work Out More. Eat Less will be on the left-hand page. Work Out More will be on the right-hand page.
Yeah, I don't know, dude. That sounds like a fad, right?
exactly.
What's next? Consume or burn more calories than you consume? Is that going to be the next book?
That is the sequel. And listen, I'm not planning on selling any books, Jim.
Dude, yeah, but you know what, though? I mean, dude, you look amazing. Like, for those who do not know, like, what transformation, because I'm all about reinvention, transformation. You clearly did this physically. What prompted it? How much weight did you lose?
So I lost about 65 pounds total, and I put about probably 10 pounds of muscle back on. But I went from 280 down to 215, and it was my family and I went on vacation in 2020. And I was looking at the pictures of it, and I looked like Charlie Brown. My head was so fat, it looked like Charlie Brown's head. And I was just like, I don't want to be this person anymore. I don't like it. So I started doing a couple different things. I started intermittent fasting. I started counting calories. And I've been able to keep at it. And instead of looking at it like a diet where there's an end goal, and if I hit this weight, I'm done, I looked at it like, this is how I'm going to live the rest of my life. And it's actually been pretty – once I lost the weight, it's not bad, because you know how much I love food. I still get to eat some really good stuff. I just a little more in moderation, and you make sure you're working out. And it hasn't been as bad. I thought it'd be torture, but I'm loving it. And there's some stores I can shop in now that I certainly couldn't have shopped in before.
I love it. I love hearing it. And to your point, it's a lifestyle. It's not a diet. You're not denying yourself. It's a identity move. It's a lifestyle. He is Andy Staples. Andy, really appreciate it. Great to have you back. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
He's the best. Andy Staples. He looks amazing.